This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official Raider podcast. I'm your host, JT. Coming up, we'll get you ready for the Raiders game this Sunday at Kansas City, taking on the Chiefs and looking for the sweep. But we're going to begin by going back to what happened last Sunday in the Battle of the Bay as the Raiders beat the San Francisco 49ers by a score of 24-13. Everything came together for the silver and black. How about Bo Jackson as a captain walking to midfield before the start of the game, and then the Hall of Famer lighting the torch in memory of Al Davis. There were Niner fans in attendance, but the Raider Nation united from the tailgates outside to all the fans that were in their seats and didn't sit down from the first quarter on. The atmosphere was electric, and the Raiders, they were going to be tested coming off that loss the week before to St. Louis, 52-0. We needed to see which team would show up. They were led by Derek Carr, who had another outstanding game. As a young quarterback in this league, we know there's going to be some highs and lows. Carr was outstanding, 22-28 for 254 yards, 140 quarterback rating, three touchdowns, no interceptions as he found Michael Rivera.
Third and goal, 5-yard line. Raiders run a play. They have three receivers right. Rivera left. Now he's looking for Rivera. Got it! Touchdown! Raiders!
Great day by Michael Rivera. Seven receptions for 109 yards and that touchdown. And Latavius Murray, 23 carries for 76 yards. The long carry of the day, 16 yards. Great win for the Raiders, and very happy for Tony Sparano after the game as he was able to celebrate with his team winning the Battle of the Bay.
It's a good football team out there we beat today, and I'm really happy for our fans, really happy for our owner, our GM. I'm mostly happy for the kids in that room. They deserve it. Been a long week, and they fought their tails off for me this week, and I really appreciate that.
After the game, I went into the locker room, and I had an opportunity to listen to Tony Sparano's speech. It was electric. Everyone in that room, from the players to the trainers to the coaches, were locked in. Tony Sparano has been giving everything that he's got to help the Raiders win. He made that clear after the game. Look, the Raiders aren't going to the playoffs this year, but the Thursday night win on the night the tribute to Ray Guy went down, that was a big win nationally for the Raiders. And then they beat the Niners in the Battle of the Bay. Keep the momentum going. That's what it's all about. And in the Battle of the Bay, fans on both sides were going after each other verbally in a kind way heading into that game. And afterwards, as I walked to Bart, that's right, real men take Bart. I walked to Bart with thousands of Raider fans who were really excited heading into the holiday season. Way to go, Raiders. A game that the Raiders had to have, and they were able to pull it off. All right, our first guest on the official Raider podcast is Paul Gutierrez, and he's covered the Raiders for over 9 years, and now he works for ESPN covering the 49ers. I saw Paul on the sideline during the game and wanted to have him join us as our first guest. And Paul, good to see you. And coming off that game, over the last couple of games, what did you notice? What stayed with you after that game, the highs and lows for both teams?
Well, you know, in having covered the Raiders, JT, for 9 years before making the switch over to the other side of the Bay, it was interesting to me, you know, because I did cover the Raiders throughout training camp, and I was there for the first two exhibition games, and it looked like they were a team that was on the come. They seemed like they were doing some things the right way with a good draft and signing a lot of quality veterans. And then you saw where they got off to that bad start, and they're 1-11 coming in there. But seeing the way the team played, seeing that they seem to have that franchise quarterback finally in Derek Carr and a building block on the defensive side with Khalil Mack, it seems like they have some pieces in place to grow for the future. Now, whether they're able to fill around some good spots around and put some mortar around those bricks, so to speak, going forward, that's the big question, as well as who is the general manager going to be, who is the coach going to be going forward. But it was pretty impressive to see what the Raiders were able to do to a team in the 49ers that coming into the season was supposed to be a Super Bowl contender. Now, you saw a lot of things here with the 49ers, a lot of things in flux with their offensive line, with so many rumors from even before the opening kickoff that Jim Harbaugh had lost the locker room and that he was going to be on his way out. And in a weird way, you kind of wonder if just a lot of that talk has really manifested itself in the play of the team. You know, that's karma and things talking that way. But when you look at the actual tangible facts here, the offensive line has been in flux all year long. The receivers have not been the game breakers, and and game changer that you thought. And Colin Kaepernick has regressed a little bit as the quarterback as well, and not being really utilized to his talents that are, you know, hybrid type talents as well. So a lot of things that are still in the air, a lot of question marks going forward for both teams, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the quarterbacks in that game. A lot the media played that up, rightfully so. Everybody got into it, Carr versus Kaepernick. Carr comes out of that with the win. He threw three touchdowns in the game. I want to start with Carr because you know Carr from watching him come into the league, but you had a chance to watch him warm up from the sideline, be there for the game, and then after the game in the locker rooms. Do you like the way he carries himself as the future leader of the Oakland Raiders? Because there's a lot of losses on that resume already, but I'm pretty impressed on the way he's handling those losses and putting them behind him and getting ready for the next opponent.
Absolutely. He doesn't look like a rookie, and I guess by this point of the season, they're no longer rookies, right? But coming in, the plan was that he was going to take that redshirt year, and he was going to sit and learn at the knee of Matt Schaub. Well, things got changed and he was thrown into the fire. And you're right, JT. I believe that he has handled it really well. Like I said, he doesn't look like a rookie. He looks like a guy who grew up and could watch and learn from the mistakes of an older brother who was the number one overall draft pick. And that is indeed the case with him. So he just carries himself with so much composure out there. And you know, with all those losses on there, those are things that the guys can build on. And I'm not even making this comparison here, but you looked at what happened to John Elway in his rookie season with the Denver Broncos. He had to be benched at one point because he was taking so many lumps, both physically and mentally, and look what he turned out to be. So, again, not saying that he's John Elway, but I was impressed with just the maturity of him. And he's an older rookie, too. You know, he's already married, has a child. So he's got his priorities in a certain order. People would say they're in the right order, but he does enjoy playing the game. This is a guy that grew up around the NFL anyway because of what his brother was doing a decade ago.
Were you surprised to see what happened with C.O. Moore and Kaepernick from the halftime speculation and after the game and what was said on Instagram? I didn't see that coming. I know C.O. Moore is a real emotional player. Has that been brewing for a while? Did that come out of nowhere?
I think it kind of came out of nowhere, and looking at it from the 49er perspective and seeing, having covered the 49ers, you're noticing that a lot of teams are trying to get under Colin Kaepernick's skin because he's a real emotional player. He plays with his emotions and his heart on his sleeve anyway. So when you got a lot of defensive players that are doing a lot of talking, he's going to answer back because he got a lot of pride. And you wonder if a quarterback should have that much emotion to where they're going to snap back. Now, when you see the video, when you see that CO and they just kind of scream at each other a little bit, and then CO takes it to social media, well, that takes it to another level. But, that's the kind of behavior that you kind of expect from a young, impressionable defensive player. You don't expect that from a quarterback. And Colin Kaepernick was actually asked about that today. And he said, yeah, he did kind of challenge me, but I'm not a guy that's going to back down from a challenge either. So at this point, I think it's water under the bridge, and I think we'd all be shocked to listen to what kinds of things are said on the football field, especially after a tackle or under a pile.
Paul Gutierrez joins us. Paul, we're both in a tough spot here. I work for the Raiders and have respect for Tony Sperano. You cover the 49ers now, but know the Raiders up close and personal. Where did you stand on all the hype with Jim Harbaugh coming into Oakland for that game? Mark Davis, he knows a lot of the Raider coaches, all the hype around it leading up to the game and then in the press conference after the game. Do you think there's something there that Harbaugh would consider coming over to the other side of the bay?
I think he would consider, JT, and I think the key there is, would Mark Davis consider Jim Harbaugh? We know that Jim Harbaugh cut his coaching teeth in the NFL with the Raiders under Al Davis, and that Al Davis liked him, and that Jim Harbaugh adored Al Davis. And you know, it kind of makes sense from that aspect. And then from the other side of the mirror, so to speak, is that Jim Harbaugh's family enjoys the Bay Area. You know, he was at Stanford before coming to the Niners, and if he is indeed let go by the Niners, that would make kind of perfect sense. But the difference here, and again, it's not taking a shot at the Raiders at all, just kind of looking at it realistically, is when Jim Harbaugh came to the 49ers, it was a solid roster that had talent that lacked direction. Mike Singletary was not a good head football coach in the NFL at that time. So when Jim Harbaugh comes in, he sees the talent at his disposal, boom, instant success. As I mentioned earlier, you've got a good young quarterback in Derek Carr. You've got a building piece on the defensive side in Khalil Mack. They're not a head coach away. They're not a couple players away from being a Super Bowl contender. They're in a building process. And we all know what Jim Harbaugh's MO is when he comes in. It's kind of a military approach. He likes to break guys down and build it back up in his own image to get them going. And I don't know if the Raiders could afford to do that in less than 1 year, 2 years, because as we know with Jim Harbaugh, he kind of burns bridges after about 3 or 4 years. So it's interesting to see how you weigh those positives and those negatives if he is indeed a good fit for the Raiders. And again, with all the negativity that's going on around here, I'm not so sure if the Raiders, from the Raiders' perspective, they want to bring in that bunch of negativity and throw it in Derek Carr's world. And again, I say that when the flip side of that coin is, look at what Jim Harbaugh did with Andrew Luck at Stanford, and look what he did for Colin Kaepernick, at least in his first couple of years as a starter in the NFL as well.
Paul, I know you've been real busy. You wrote the book, 100 Things Raider Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Jim Plunkett wrote the foreword. Talk about the creative process of that book, and then let's go over a couple of those things. The fun part of building that book, writing it, the research that you did, and the connection that you have with Raider fans. What are the top things that you think Raider fans must do before they die?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In doing the book, it was a fun project. It was definitely a labor of love. I grew up in Southern California, the son of a huge Raider fan. My dad is still a Raider fan. And, those are the games that I watched growing up in Southern California. It was the L.A. Rams and the L.A. Raiders, you know. So a lot of the history was already built in knowing things. But having covered the team and building relationships with the likes of Jim Plunkett, Tom Flores, Cliff Branch, I basically wanted to tell the story of this franchise through their eyes and through their voices. And it's basically 100 short stories that kind of tell the history of the franchise and try to spin it forward as to where this franchise is going. Mark Davis was a huge help through it. He gave me some good stories about himself as a kid that Tom Flores said that during practice in the early 60s and Al Davis was the coach, Mark would run out there as this little kid and steal the ball and take off. He would upset the players, and some of the older guys would pull him aside, and they would be the ones to tape him up to the goalposts and kind of haze him that way. And Mark said, hey, that was his hazing introduction to the team as well. Mark said that at one point he was Cliff Branch's agent. And I thought, well, how did that go over at home? He said, well, he was kicked out of the house for a little while, but then when Cliff Branch had a couple touchdowns in Super Bowl 15, he was welcomed back into the family. So there's a lot of lightheartedness in it. I got to talk to Carl Weathers, who, you know, as a kid growing up, that was Apollo Creed. You know, that was the master of disaster, the king of sting, the Count of Monte Cristo. But he also had a great Al Davis story to tell, too. So in order to connect it with the fans, you do some things. Well, here's some things you have to do. In my opinion, they should go to the Commitment to Excellence dinner, because it's a very low-key event where they're able to rub shoulders and elbows literally with the guys that are on the team that come to the dinner. Go to Ricky's Sports Bar in San Leandro, which anytime a friend of mine comes into town that's a Raider fan, I make sure that I take them there and kiss the ring, so to speak, with Ricky. And it's kind of a mecca for Raider fans. And I end the book, and I don't know if I'm giving away the store here, but I end the book, chapter number 100, is go pay your final respects to Al Davis at his final resting place at Chapel of the Chimes in the Oakland Hills, because chapter 1 is about Al Davis. Chapter 100, we close it out with paying your respect to Al Davis, because really there's no way you can write a book about the Raiders without it not entirely being about him, but a huge portion of the book being about him as well.
Fantastic. Those things you mentioned, I've been a part of all of it, and I can't believe it, because Raider fans need to know, especially if they're from out of town, if they're coming into Oakland, where Al Davis was laid to rest. Going to Ricky's is a rite of passage, no doubt about that. And the Commitment to Excellence Awards is a great night. Hey, Paul, as we wrap this up, the future of the Raiders, we're talking about the last couple of games here as we're previewing the game at Kansas City, but there's going to be a lot of work here in the offseason. Do you think it's smooth sailing, this talk of a stadium, what's going to happen in Oakland, possibly a coach, general manager? There's a lot in flux as we wrap up the regular season.
Yeah, JT, and that's kind of been par for the course, right? Since the Super Bowl season, so many questions, unanswered questions going forward. And you know, obviously, if you're going to go get a high-profile celebrity-type coach, well, then you have to have an idea as to where this franchise is going to be, not only next year, but for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years going forward. And if they can put a shovel in the ground in the East Bay, more power to the Raiders, because then there's that stability and that continuity that this franchise needs so badly. If they're able to do that, they're able to go out and whether it is a Jim Harbaugh or, and dare I say it, to get the fans excited, John Gruden, he would be the guy that I think all fans would get behind and support the team going forward. There's so many questions that need to happen and be answered, actually. And I think that's what this offseason is about. And it really, it starts from the top on down, because once you realize or figure out if if Mark Davis decides to keep Reggie McKenzie, well, okay, well, then now you know what kind of coach you're looking for. And if Mark Davis has already said that he's going to have a more of a hand in picking that next coach, well, there you go, because you still have Los Angeles is beckoning. San Antonio continues to make itself known as a potential suitor. You know, there's some other cities that are involved as well. But in terms of staying in the East Bay, staying in the Oakland area, they need to figure out a lot of things, too. And they all kind of go hand in hand.
I highly recommend everybody go to Amazon.com, pick up the book, 100 Things Raider Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Paul Gutierrez. Paul, great catching up with you. Great to see you at the Battle of the Bay. Hope to see you soon.
Appreciate it, JT. Thank you.
So I hope you get an opportunity to pick up Paul's book. It's a good, quick read, and you'll enjoy it during the holidays. Our next guest is Jay Binkley, who's a very successful sports talk host in Kansas City on 610 Sports. And Jay, when I talked to you on your radio show, and now you're on our official Raider podcast, I didn't think Kansas City would lose that first game. They looked like they were the better team coming in. But now with the Raiders beating the 49ers, are the Raiders getting the respect they deserve in Kansas City?
I think the Raiders are in everybody's mind right now. The thing that I think, you know, going into that game is just how well the Chiefs were playing. And you thought short week, you'd take Andy Reid over Sperano, and you thought they had the advantage coaching-wise, because Kansas City can't win unless they have the advantage coaching-wise. They're not talented enough to do so. But I think Latavius Murray, C.J. Anderson, and Kerwin Williams are the name of three backs that have absolutely torched this defense. A lot of people might say, who's that, and hit Google to find out who they are. But at Kansas City, they know their names, and people are a little bit concerned about Latavius Murray because they have not shown the ability to stop the run whatsoever this season.
And, Jay, why is that? Is that the point of attack, the defensive tackles? Is it linebackers getting off blocks? Why has that been such a problem?
Well, I think a couple things, JT. In week one, you lose a Mike DeVito and a Derek Johnson. And I think, you know, Mike DeVito is not a superstar in this league, but what he is a 3-4 defensive end that takes two-gap responsibility seriously and holds people off the linebacker. He's not a showboat, not I'm going to get to the quarterback, make my name. He does his job, which let Derek Johnson, one of the best middle linebackers in football, flow to the ball. Well, those two guys get hurt. Now what is it? Is it the defensive coordinator? I can't put it all on Bob Sutton, although I'd like to at times. But when you see guys in the right places to make tackles, JT, and they're not doing it, it comes down sometimes to just fundamentals and sometimes just the players can't tackle. And I think some of it's scheme, but to be honest with you, I think it comes down to just talent and not tackling, JT. I think that's the real problem.
And if you look at the personnel of Kansas City coming into the season, we talked about when Andy Reid took over, there was Pro Bowl talent on both sides of the ball. Assess the play and the talent of this team now. When you look at it and see eyeball test, do you see Pro Bowlers everywhere? We'll get to Eric Berry in a second and what's going on with him. But is the talent there the same talent or better than when Andy Reid took over?
No, there's not a lot of talent. The only, you know, true elite talent you could say is a Jamal Charles and probably Justin Houston as a pass rusher. Then just some above average players. This team is sorely lacking in talent, JT. And I'm a firm believer, you win in the offseason. And the Chiefs had a glaring hole. It was wide receiver. We all know it. We all know that they still haven't had a wide receiver touchdown. What gets me, JT, is that this wide receiving class, the draft class, most touchdowns, most yards, and most catches in National Football League history. It's what the Chiefs needed, and they neglected that and instead drafted an outside linebacker at 23, which, by the way, has three tackles on the season. They didn't address their needs, but I will say this, and the Chiefs won't admit it because nobody likes to say the R word, rebuild, or the P word, process. But that's what the Chiefs are doing. I looked at the Chiefs' non-movement in the offseason and the way they attack the draft is they're building for 2015. Now, they've done, you know, they've won with coaching because Andy Reid has coached this team up, but they didn't address the talent issues. I think really in 2015 and beyond is when the Chiefs start getting better on a talent basis.
Jay Binkley is our guest, joins us from 610 Sports in Kansas City as we preview the Raiders at Kansas City on Sunday. Jay, what jumps out at me, you mentioned Alex Smith not throwing a touchdown to a wide receiver. How is he handling that? What's it like in the locker room after a win or a loss when the media swarms around Alex Smith and they're pointing a finger at him? Because from what you're saying, it's not completely his fault. He doesn't have the talent around him at that position.
No, he really doesn't, and that's the tough thing. But then again, you see some quarterbacks make the talent. I mean, Julian Edelman, if he's playing in Kansas City, probably sits with 10 catches for about 140 yards. I mean, quarterbacks can make the talent better, and that's my main concern with Alex Smith. He's a guy, and, you know, the game manager word's thrown out there all the time, but it's truly what he is. He does what's required, but does he make you better? And they've been answering this question, and they keep deflecting at Andy Reid, you know, once again today. So, well, the touchdowns will come, or we give the touchdowns to other people. You know, Jamal gets his, the tight end gets his. But the offensive line has been shaky. But then again, it goes down to getting rid of the football quicker. And one reason that Alex Smith should have some success down the field, teams are stacking 8 and 9 guys in the box and saying, you beat us, Alex Smith, you beat us. They almost dare Andy Reid and Alex Smith to go down the field, and they just refuse to do it. And they also refuse to give the ball to Jamal Charles. His carries and touches lately have been absolutely embarrassing, but they just keep deflecting the question. The Alex Smith supporters, you know, will say, well, the line's terrible and the receivers are terrible. Well, heck, Denver's line is not the best in the world, but they make do by receivers getting separation and the quarterback being smart with the football. That was a train wreck by Alex Smith that last drive of the game against Arizona, JT. They were throwing horizontally and not vertically. They spent 18 seconds wasted with Alex Smith trying to figure out what he was doing. The quarterback play, quite honestly, has been embarrassing.
You mentioned Jamal Charles. He has a career of highlight plays against the Raiders. I mean, this guy has chewed up the Raiders in the past, and the Raiders were able to contain him in that Thursday night win on national television. I would assume Andy Reid's coming into this game with a heavy dose of Jamal Charles on the ground and getting him in space where he can catch the ball coming out of the backfield and then cut across the field and try to make the Raiders miss.
Well, it's weird to say, JT, and I know he missed the game and was hurt, but he had 50 less touches going in the last week than he did at the same time last year. Andy Reid is not using him very much. Look at his carries the last couple of games. He has 10 carries in the last game. He got like 2 catches. He is not getting the football. His catches are down. His runs are down. And Andy Reid is not adapting to the talent that he has. I mean, he has a short shelf life on running backs. They paid Jamal Charles, and they're just not using him. Now, I will say this. Against the San Francisco 49ers, Jamal was barely used. Andy Reid said he was negligent. After the Tennessee game, they barely used Jamal. Said, well, we need to give the ball to Jamal more. After last week's game, it was, oh, we probably could have stood to give the ball to Jamal Charles. I mean, we're tired of hearing it. This is 3 games now. Why don't you feed your playmaker? So you would think Jamal would be heavily involved against the Raiders. But then again, Andy Reid has been going against conventional wisdom and not using his most talented player.
Jay Binkley is our guest. I look at Kansas City and I see the talent, and I'm wondering, in that division, are they thinking the same thing that the Raiders are thinking? Wow, Peyton Manning's there. We can't wait for him to eventually retire. The Raiders and the Chiefs are going to be tracking down Peyton Manning for years to come.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And that's clearly what I thought last year with the draft, when you basically draft a replacement for Tom Bailey in the first round. It has 2015 earmarked all over. You didn't go crazy on wide receivers. You didn't go crazy on free agent spending. And a part of me understands that, saying, do we really want to go crazy, or is that window not going to be open until Peyton Manning's gone? Then we can start competing more for the division. But yeah, I think Kansas City can't wait. They can't beat Peyton Manning. I mean, he can even come in here and throw for 179 yards and whip them like he did a week ago. They cannot wait for him to leave.
I want to ask you about a couple players on the Raiders in your opinion. We'll start with Derek Carr at quarterback, and he had a big game beating the 49ers. I know you saw that game. Clearly, that should be cause for concern for the Chiefs, just trying to slow down Carr, who's a gunslinger who makes plays as the pocket breaks down.
Yeah, I like Derek Carr. As a matter of fact, I used Derek Carr as an example on the show after the Chiefs and Raiders game. I said, well, the stats aren't going to pop out at you, but what he did is he led a team down to a win. He went on a long drive of 80 yards, in that one. We've been waiting for that from Alex Smith, and you already have it in a rookie quarterback in Derek Carr. But I like the future of Derek Carr. I always thought if the Raiders get that coach and a quarterback, that's when they can begin some stability and bring this rivalry back to something fun, and they've already got 50% of that done.
It's interesting when you see Khalil Mack play, the guy is a beast coming off the edge, but he's such a young player, and the sky's the limit for him, but it's going to take a couple of years until he develops into an elite superstar. The Chiefs have Justin Houston, who's leading the league with 16 sacks. That's a big number with three games to go. How is Houston put up those productive numbers? Is he getting double teamed less than I'm seeing here, or is he just coming around the edge and making big decisions? What a year.
Two words for you, JT, contract year. And he knew he had to get into that rare air. And supposedly the Chiefs had worked out some kind of a deal the first day of training camp when they're paying Jamal, and then it's about paying Justin Houston. But they didn't work it out. Justin Houston's been wanting elite-type money. But the thing about Justin Houston, you know, his elite season is about 11-sack season with some injuries. He needed to get into the J.J. Watt category, into the Von Miller category, and have that 16-plus, 17, 18-plus sack season. And he's done that now. But I'll tell you this much, too. There was only one guy at Chiefs camp every day hitting the sled after practice. You could hear the sound after our audio of Andy Reid talking. There was this sound being popped on a sled. It was Justin Houston. And I think having Tom Bali on the other side is a certain benefit to him, plus Dontari push in the middle. But JT, we've been screaming in this town to pay Justin Houston. You need an elite level pass rusher. And here's the bottom line. When it came down to who you're going to pay, Alex Smith or Justin Houston, my thought all along is, why don't you pay Justin Houston? Because he has more of a chance of success this year than Alex Smith with the line and the receivers. Alex Smith's stock wasn't going to go up, but I think they'll pay him, JT, but it's more looking more and more like the franchise tag. And we all know how players love that.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying about a contract year, but this guy's unbelievable. He deserves to get paid. Hey, Jay, finally, I haven't been to Arrowhead since the stadium remodel. What is it like knowing, heading into every game at Arrowhead, you're going to break the decibel record or come close to it, the place is packed, the fans are locked in, and describe to this Raider audience what Raider Week is like on the radio, throughout the media, and leading up to game day on Sunday?
JT, it's been quiet, to be honest with you. And I don't know if the Royals kind of took some buzz, you know, away from the Chiefs this year. I think they certainly did through camp. And you don't have the raw emotion of the Raiders like you used to in this town. I think a lot of it, to some extent, has been more venom towards the Denver Broncos, because the Denver Broncos have been bending you over and spanking you. We cannot beat the Denver Broncos. And they have something identifiable. When it was John Elway, there was a face of the hatred. When he was gone and Mike Shanahan, and you had somebody to hate. And now with John Elway in the front office and Peyton Manning at the quarterback, you have an identifiable villain. The Raiders don't have that identifiable villain anymore. It's not a coach. It's not a quarterback. It's not somebody consistently that has beat you. And I think when you don't have a face of who you don't like, and the fact that the Raiders and Chiefs haven't been competing for the top of the division, I think the rivalries took a hit. Now, the people say, oh, Chiefs-Raiders, but it's really not that big a deal as it used to be.
Jay, we really wanted to get you on here because you know the team inside and out. I really appreciate your time, and hopefully we can catch you out in Oakland next year. I'll come out to Kansas City and we'll get together. We really appreciate you coming on the Official Raider Podcast.
Great. Thanks a lot, JT. Look forward to the game this weekend.
Thanks again to Jay Binkley for joining us. And for everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. Remember, you can check out what we do at Raiders.com every week with hashtag AskJT. And we'll have the podcast going as we get you ready for the Buffalo Bills. That'll be the next Raiders home game. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.